Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch Live, another Messiah's Branch National Satellite Radio Program. We are broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is August 29, 2013. With Mission Watch Live, we are warning the world as it happens. If you need help with anything after the program, please call me. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, and if you even have a prayer, you can leave that request too. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682. You can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program, archives, all these things you can find at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. prophecyhour.com, or give me a call, and my emergency number is 316-619-4886, and that's for emergencies. Remember, respect it, it's a cell phone. Anyway, a prayer, and then we'll bring on tonight's guest. Well, in the first half, we'll bring on tonight's guest with some breaking news. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, I pray that radio goes according to your will and not mine nor guest's will, and please give us all out there ears in which to hear the truth. Amen and amen. Well, folks, tonight we have back on with us in the first half, Ben Barrick. Ben, of course, most of you know, is an investigative reporter, and he's one of your favorites to listen to. He also works with Wally Zubat. And so let's just get Ben on and let him tell us about this breaking news. So what's going on, Ben?
Pastor Dan, how are you?
So great to have you on. I love the sound of that voice, because with that voice, you know, folks, listen to his voice closely, because that's a voice of truth, let alone why he doesn't claim to be a prophet or anything like that. This guy's insights on the news have hit the nail on the head time and time and time again. Back to you, Ben.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, as you know, you and your listeners know, Pastor, that the IRS scandal that we view as the mother, we call it the IRS Uber scandal, which involves Lois Lerner, who your listeners may be familiar with. She's the IRS tax-exempt lady. She granted illegal tax-exempt status to Malik Obama. Malik Obama is Barack Obama's half-brother. His foundation, back in 2011, granted him 38 months backdated retroactive 501c3 status in less than 30 months, or 30 days. So it's unheard of, and it's illegal. It's
right.
Literally illegal for her to do that. So Lois Lerner's signature is at the bottom of this application, this approval letter. That's illegal by itself, but if you look at what Malik Obama does, his foundation, what he does, he works for the Islamic Dawah organization, an entity of the Sudanese government, which is led by Butcher Omar al-Bashir, who is Muslim Brotherhood, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court on 7 counts of crimes against humanity, and Sudan is one of only 4 countries on the state U.S. State Department list of state sponsors of terrorism. One of the other 4 is Cuba, or as John Kennedy would say, Cuba. And the other is another is Iran, and I forget what the fourth one is. It might be
I don't know. I don't remember either. It used to be Libya, but then, you know, Gaddafi got a little scared there before, and we took him off the list.
Yeah, I would have to look into that. I'm not sure, but those are 3 of them. I mean, Sudan, Iran, and Cuba.
Right.
That's bad. That's bad. And Barack Obama's half-brother's working for the Sudanese government. So the reason that I bring this up is that the House Ways and Means Committee is one of the committees in the House that is investigating the IRS scandals. And as I've watched these IRS scandals unfold, you know, they're nibbling around the edges of the bigger scandal, which is this. Which
right.
is, this would implicate Lois Lerner in being an accessory to terror funding while granting illegal tax-exempt status to a terror entity. So the House Ways and Means Committee, it was brought to my attention that one of the members of this committee is aware of this scandal, is aware of the Uber scandal. So his name is Mike Kelly. And ironically enough, I mean, I live in Texas now, but he's in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, and if I lived today where I grew up, I'd be in his district. So I didn't feel bad when he did a conference call today on the local radio station there, and I called in as Ben from Hermitage. I didn't feel too bad about that because I'm from Hermitage.
Well, I don't feel too bad about it either. We got some news out of it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So my intent was to, first and foremost, to bring this scandal to the listeners in his district while he was listening, and then also to see how he would respond. And so I did. I said, I brought what, everything I just told you, I brought up a shortened version to them, because as you know, these congressmen prefer to talk more than they let you talk. But
right.
I brought it up, and he admitted to being aware of it. He didn't deny it. He said, "Yes, I'm aware of it," and he basically just said that the IRS scandals, and I think he referred to Lois Lerner as one of the worst persons he's ever known. But he didn't answer it directly, other than to say what I got out of it was that he needs more political support. More political support. You know, he didn't deny it. That's the thing that amazed me. He didn't deny it. Just said, people need to, we need to get into these scandals, but we need help. You know, we need the American people to help. That's the reaction that I got. That's how I interpreted his response. And I don't think that's all that bad. I think that's
Well, let me talk here. I do have an opinion on that,
okay.
And this is to you and to the folks out there. Actually, to me, that strikes with a lot of honesty from this man, because the problem really is, Ben, as you well know, is the American people. They see so much stuff; they're just quiet.
Yeah.
We need to be speaking out, and I think that's what he meant. I think he means for us to speak out, to raise Cain about it, and when we do, then that empowers him to. You think?
Exactly, and that's how I interpreted it. And you know, I'm skeptical of politicians, as I know you are, and I was when I called in. I'm like, okay, is he gonna deny that he knows about it? No, he didn't. And I thought that was good. My sense is that he is one of the good guys. And there are a few in Congress, and I think he's one of them. But I don't think he's got a lot of power. But you know, you talk about, look, last, the Huma Abedin story, which you're very familiar with. You
right.
know, last year, Michelle Bachmann with four other congressmen, wrote letters, you know, to try to get the ball moving on this stuff. They took a chance. They took a risk. They took, you know, they went out and stuck their necks out on this stuff. They were right, but they didn't get any support. The only congressman, the only member of Congress who stood with them was Steve King out of Iowa. Every
right.
other congressman either remained silent or sided against her. In fact, there were more Republicans in Congress who defended Huma Abedin and her Muslim Brotherhood connections than who sided with Bachmann. And I think that's, you know, part of the reason is obviously the media, but we're not going to change them. The other part of it is the American people and people being educated enough. And not only people being educated enough, but those who do know being able to communicate and educate other people. That's when the worm is going to turn, is when enough people know about it. And these politicians, I mean, I guarantee you Mike Kelly looked at that last year and just said, what's the point of doing that if nobody's going to stand with you? You know, that's where we're in need of we're in desperate need of a backlash from the,
right.
from the American people.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think our forefathers, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think so. Our forefathers saw the news media as an other arm of government that would hold it accountable to the people, and the people would rise up. I don't think they foresaw this takeover of the media by extremists, really, on one side. And I'm going to call them extremists because there really is more of us than there are of them. It's just that the people here on the right, and I get this a lot, Ben, and a lot of my guests, is that because, you know, we do have that Prophecy Hour program, of course, is that the American church, you know, is silent. And, you know, that's where most of the Christians are, and that's where the alarm bell should be rung from, but it's just not. The Christian right is just being quiet, and so therefore, you know, our side is just being silent, and we're being bowled over.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right about the press and the founding fathers and how they envision it. I mean, look, the press is known as the fourth estate, and the fourth estate, being what it is something that it's a rare bird in that it's allowed to do what others are not. So it's supposed to be self-accountable. It's supposed to be adversarial by nature. The press, and which is why it's given a long leash before you can start prosecuting it or going after people in the press. If you do that, that's counterproductive. So I believe the founders had this inherent belief that the press and the people in it wanted to be adversarial. There was no desire to be sycophantic. There was no desire to be lapdogs for the establishment. That it was an inherently adversarial entity. Well, here we are, and it's exactly the opposite. How we got here, I don't know. I mean, I have ideas, and I think that the one major one is, you know, the press, especially the national press in D.C. You look at Martha Raddix of ABC. She's married to the FCC commissioner, Barack Obama's FCC commissioner. You look at Cass Sunstein. I mean, he's married to Samantha Power. And I know neither one of those are in the media per se, but I think what we have is an incestuous relationship. These people all swim in the same circles. They know each other. They marry each other. They've got each other's back. And we're out here in flyover country paying for their cocktail parties, and they're giving us a line of BS every night. And I think that's what's happened, and it's really unfortunate.
Well, I'm really in tune to what you're saying, and I agree with you, but I'll throw something else out there to you that something I have been really looking into for a while and brought different guests in and talked about it. Our problems really arise with, and this is the problem with the country, it's called education. The people that are in our universities that predominantly teach journalism, where a lot of these guys are reporters and everybody goes through, are actually in themselves, the teachers are Marxist and leftist, and these people started infiltrating in the 60s and later on, and they are teaching these leftist things. All these people you mentioned are leftist. All these people have been educated by the same sources, and that is the problem. And there's another word for it, and it's called communism. Oh, I sound like McCarthy now, right?
Yeah, McCarthy wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I agree, totally. But it is education, and, you know, and that goes back to us. We should check on, we need to look into what the schools are teaching our children. We need to look at what schools you're helping pay for your children's college. Well, you need to see what kind of ideas are putting forward, because those ideas, those teachers are destroying America.
Yeah. It's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So moving on from that, let me ask you about something else that's in the news, and I know Wallage talked about it, and when I asked you on the phone, you wasn't real sure, and I'm a little unsure myself. So do you think that the Syrian government actually did the bombing, or do you think that it was the rebels?
Here's what I'll say about that. We have done a lot of research. We've done a lot of looking into this. The evidence that we have, and there's more than one piece of it, I mean multiple pieces of evidence. The evidence that we have is that we have seen that Syrian rebels, evidence that Syrian rebels have committed or have launched chemical attacks. Okay, that's a fact. Now, at least that's what the evidence points to. Multiple. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm saying back to March. There's you know, various instances where it appears that the rebels are the ones that have launched chemical weapons attacks. And with how eager this administration is to pin the weapons attacks on the Assad regime, I got to believe that had any of those been Assad, we would have been hearing about it. But we didn't. Now, the attack in question is August 21st. That's the one from last week that's got everybody's dander up here in the United States and the administration and everywhere else. But even at that, we don't have confirmation that this is the Assad regime's attack. In fact, yesterday, Foreign Policy magazine released a report courtesy of what they say was Israeli intelligence, and U.S. intelligence backed it up, that they intercepted phone calls or conversations between Assad regime general or somebody with the Assad regime and somebody else that was, quote, panicked after the attack. Well, that doesn't confirm anything. I mean, yesterday Barack Obama's on with two media sycophants, Glenn Eifel and Judy Woodruff, who are probably, well, never mind. But yesterday he was talking to them saying, we have concluded that this is the Assad regime that did this. Really? Really? Well, today the Associated Press, which is essentially an arm of the Obama White House, has come out and said, wait a minute, this is no slam dunk. We can't confirm that Assad was the one that launched this stuff. So, I mean, I go back to, it's a panicked phone call from a general, okay? If you intentionally launched chemical weapons, why would a general be contacting somebody from wherever these chemical weapons may have been launched from in a panicked tone? Why wouldn't he be calling saying, good job, buddy, that's what we wanted? Why would it be a panicked call?
Right.
And the other thing about this, Pastor Dan, is that prior to June, the rebels were having varying degrees of success. When I say rebels, I'm talking Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Ansar al-Sharia, all that. And interestingly, you know, you talk about, have you forgotten about 9/11? All of these doofuses that want to go into Syria and support the rebels, I would say to them, have you forgotten last year? Because Ansar al-Sharia, the group that hit us in 9/11 in Benghazi, is helping the rebels in Syria. So, you know, I mean, that's a whole new spin on the Daryl Worley song. But the whole thing about this is before June, the rebels were having varying degrees of success. Since June, the Assad regime has been kicking butt. Mm-hmm. So if Assad was going to use chemical weapons, it would seem to me that he would have used them before he's got the opposition on the run. Why would he use them now? It makes no sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And then the Egypt thing with the Muslim Brotherhood losing in Egypt, this whole Syria thing has its smacks of desperation and distraction more than it does Assad launching chemical weapons.
Well, we know for sure. We've talked about it so many times, and we only have a few minutes left. But Obama is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, but aren't the Muslim Brotherhood tied to Al-Qaeda? So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. We become our enemy's air force. But then again, Obama doesn't treat them like our enemies.
No. Here's what we need to understand. And the good news about all of this, the Arab Spring, is that the Muslim Brotherhood, the term Muslim Brotherhood has been enunciated more in the last few months than it has been in probably the last 50 years in Western media circles. Mm-hmm. We're hearing the name Muslim Brotherhood, and people are saying, what's that? Who's that? What are they about? Okay, well, let me tell you. Sit down. Pull up a chair. Let me tell you. Muslim Brotherhood is the umbrella. Do you understand what umbrella is? Hopefully they will nod at that point. Do you understand what the umbrella is? Yes. Okay, do you understand what's under umbrellas? Yes. Okay, well, there are a lot of groups under the umbrellas. Al-Qaeda is one of them. Ansar al-Sharia is another one. Hamas is another one. Several groups in the United States today, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, the Islamic Circle of North America, it goes on and on. The Muslim Students Association, the Muslim Public Affairs Council. I mean, it goes dozens of Muslim Brotherhood groups in this country. The reason that they fly under the radar is because they don't act like Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt does.
Right.
But the reason they don't act like that is because they don't have to. They're waiting.
Well, much as I hate to do it, I got to throw a bucket of water on you. We've come to the end of the first half. I appreciate you being on with me. What do you want me to give out? Shubat.com?
Shubat.com? Okay, yes. Go to Shubat.com. Within the next couple hours, we'll have the audio of that call with Congressman Kelly posted.
All right, folks, do that. And there's also some videos over there. You can see some of the proof that we're talking about the rebels actually firing and talking about the missiles. Thanks a lot, Ben. We'll talk again. We'll be back,
sir.
Folks, with impeachable offenses after the break.
Pastor Dan will be right back. Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149. $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Food prices going up. Homes being foreclosed, unemployment insurance running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people. Your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
Back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch on the American Mission Watch Live, that is, on the American Voice Radio Network. Please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us. You know, we really get no help from any organized churches or government agencies. It's only folks like you that have supported us for the last 13 years, now we are in our 14th year, that makes this mission church work. Right now, we're still looking for sponsors for the Women's Mercy Overflow. I get calls every day from either women or, like yesterday, from the police department wanting to know when we're going to be open. I keep saying we cannot get open no matter what about the work, but we have to raise, make sure that we have monthly support. And so we're looking at sponsors of $100 each so we can open the doors at Mercy. All we're trying to do is get the money in to pay the lights, gas, water, electric. We're not trying to pay anybody's wages. Nobody earns any wages. We're just trying to raise about $1,000 to $1,500 a month so we can pay the bills on the place. So pray about it. You can all do this by mailing a check or money order or by signing up at our website with an auto pay from a card. Yeah, we can do it with PayPal. We can donate. You can donate that monthly money from a card, and you don't even have to remember to do it every month. You can have it automatically done. But pray about it. And if you can't afford it, I understand that. But tell other people about it. Pray about being a fundraiser for us. Tell people about our radio programs. That can help. Give them our website. Give them prophecyhour.com so they can get the news, and then maybe they'll support it. There's lots of things that you can do to help besides just giving money. Anyway, if you do this or any of those things, let me know so I can count on it coming. So why do so many people come to us for help? Well, love, that is really the first answer. And then they're treated as family. That's the second. And beyond that, we have no set guidelines like programs. People just walk in the door and ask for what they need. And then if we don't have the way to help them out, we try to pray it in. And this is why all the agencies tell their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send people to us. People who have millions of dollars in their budget. Send people to a place that really has no budget. Isn't that astounding? We are the last hope for so very many. We're responsible, folks, to care one for another, as we are brothers' keepers. All donations, no matter what size, does help. And your Father, your Heavenly Father, does notice all donations that come from your heart. You can donate online by mailing a check or money order, or you can find all this information at prophecyhour.com. Or you can simply call me at 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682, and make sure you check out the radio archives over there at American Voice Radio. And now we're back in the second half. We're going to be talking about impeachable defenses, offenses, not defenses. We have Brenda J. Elliott on with us. She's an award-winning historian, researcher, and New York Times best-selling author. She's the blogger who created Resco Watch, RW, The Real Barack Obama, RBO, and RBO2. She's appeared on hundreds of local and national radio programs and has contributed numerous articles and publications. She's the co-author of Fool Me Twice, Red Army, and The Manchurian President. We talked to her before about Fool Me Twice and The Manchurian President, and I think she's online with me. Are you there, Brenda?
I am here, sir.
Well, so glad to have you on. Well, the book just came out. I haven't been able to get my hands on a copy, so you're going to have to tell me about it. Impeachable offenses, what's it about?
Well, let's start out with a primer, because this whole idea of impeachment, I don't think people quite understand what it is and what the process is all about. So once you understand that, then you understand how the rest of it might fall into place. Impeachment happens in the House of Representatives, and it starts out similar to getting an indictment by a grand jury. District attorney presents a case with some facts to a group of people, the grand jury, and they decide whether there's enough there to go forward and prosecute an individual. That's the impeachment part. That happens in the House of Representatives, and that's perhaps, I don't want to say the easy part, but it's definitely the easier part. The hard part comes when the articles of impeachment then are sent over to the Senate, which becomes the judge and jury, and they weigh the evidence. It's basically a small trial, and they weigh and listen to all the evidence, and then they decide, yay or nay, whether the president will be removed from office. The Constitution gives us this process, and it does work as long as the players involved, meaning the House of Representatives, gets the ball rolling, and then the Senate would be agreeable to removing the president. That's how it works. It's pretty simple, really. There's two or three sections in the Constitution that our founding fathers gave us and said, this is what you can do. This is your remedy for an out-of-control president.
Well, I haven't ever seen him more out of control than Barack Obama, but you said a very interesting thing. The Senate must agree. This Senate, in no way, shape, or form, would you think, would impeach Barack Obama, would they?
Well, like I said, the impeachment, Bill Clinton was impeached. That's what the House did. What the Senate would not do was would not remove him from office. So he was actually impeached. It doesn't disappear if he's not removed from office. What we are, where we are, is we are a little over a year away from the next midterm election. Just because the Senate is controlled by Democrats today, and that there may even be people in the House that might not go for impeachment today. Let's go about a year and 5 or 6 months down the road, and then we can have a whole new ball game. We can have different people in the House, assuming that Republicans maintain control of the House, and then the Senate can be turned on its head, and we can have a Republican-controlled Senate. Then we get a new set of rules. It's a different ball game, and by January 2015, who knows what's going to have happened in between.
Right
now, we're looking at war, a coalition of one leading a war in Syria, and that's our president. Nobody else wants to do with it. The Brits just said, no, thank you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Indeed. So let's talk about what is an impeachable offense. In your mind, or that's in the book, that you consider that is an impeachable? Because I wanted to say everything that he did, but what do you point out in the book that's an impeachable offense, that, you know, the most blatant one?
Well, the bottom line is, and this is put most clearly by George Will and Charles Krauthammer, they both agreed recently, they put it this way, no sitting president has executive authority to rewrite our laws. That includes the Constitution and all of the laws that are have been passed in the past or recently by Congress. No president has the right to rewrite any laws. And there are two blatant examples. One is Obamacare, and the other is executive amnesty. With amnesty, the DREAM Act, Congress has refused since 2007 to pass the DREAM Act to give amnesty or a path to citizenship to young people who were brought to this country when they were children or as minors.
Right.
Even when the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives for 2 years, and controlled the Senate. They could have passed immigration reform legislation. They chose not to do that. They put all of their eggs in the Obamacare basket. They didn't do it. Well, now, in for the past couple of years, immigration reform people, activists, are very unhappy with that. So Barack Obama did several end runs, but the most blatant one was last summer. It's called the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, effective in June of 2012. And this was basically the DREAM Act without being passed by Congress. Now, the interesting thing here, and you may have heard this, is that President Obama did this, that he issued an executive order.
Right.
Well, what we discovered when we did our research on this is that President Obama didn't have anything to do with it. He did this with his hands off. What happened was then Department of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, who has just departed, she issued a policy memorandum, and I compare this to the boss putting a sticky note on the refrigerator telling everybody to write their names on their lunch bag so that it won't get confused. You won't get somebody else's lunch.
Right.
It's a policy memorandum. It's not a law. It's not an executive order. If it was an executive order, it wouldn't be legitimate either. But at least it would have come from the president, from the White House. This was done by a departmental secretary.
Okay, you got me on that one. I thought that he made an executive order. That I thought that was what the complaint was, is he made an executive order. I didn't realize they just said what you're saying. Do you think that could be part of the reason that, you know, why do you think Janet left the scene? I thought he was overly pleased with her.
I don't know why she left. It was a shock to everyone because it was an announcement. She's leaving. She's taking another job. She's leaving. So I don't know the inside Washington politics of that, so I can't give you an answer.
Right. Well, I just thought you might have some insight. Somebody asked me a question to ask you, and they want to know, is it a simple majority or two-thirds or three-fourths to impeach or convict? What's it take, a simple majority or, a three-quarter majority?
Okay, to be removed, I'm scrolling because I have this on one of my websites here. I believe it's two-thirds. Two-thirds of the members have to be present.
Two-thirds have to be present. That doesn't mean that they...
In order for him to be convicted, two-thirds of the Senate have to be present.
Have to be present. In other words, it's two-thirds that have to vote to impeach, then. That's pretty interesting. What was the actual date this book came out? It just came out a couple of days ago, didn't it?
It came out on Tuesday.
Came out on Tuesday.
Came out.
Absolutely.
Yep, 27th.
I'm hoping that this, like I said, I have not received it yet in the mail, but I'm hoping that this may help something with the election in 2014 because if we lose 2014, what I mean by lose 2014, if
I do now,
we lose the House back or we don't gain the Senate. You know, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, aren't we?
Well, yes, we are, because if you remember, all of the sticky stuff about Obamacare doesn't kick in until January 2014. So that all of those, not all, several parts of Obamacare kick in January 2014. The midterm election, of course, is not until November 2014. So there's going to be a lot of pressure people running for the House, not the Senate as much as for the House, to hold the House. There's going to be a lot of pressure of getting those people who are running to commit to repealing or unraveling Obamacare.
Right. Well,
by January 2014, reality is going to start kicking in.
Well, I thought most Americans don't like Obamacare, you know.
They don't. Because now they're finding out what's in it. And another little statistic for you that is very interesting. We were told that about 30 million Americans were without health insurance, right?
Right.
In 2022, there will be about 30 million Americans without health insurance.
Really?
Really.
And, you know, now they're going along with it. Let me back up a second. Obamacare, he just now made put off the mandate by his voice, said, okay, well, the companies don't have to, go along with the mandate until 2014. Isn't that in itself changing the law?
Absolutely. Now, going to Obamacare, talking about the Obamacare law, there was just the Pew people do a lot of polling. And I'm not quite sure where they fit in politically. They're supposed to be in the middle. But it seems to me like all of their polls favored the progressives. But anyhow, just saw a Pew poll where something like 40% of the people that were asked, they did not know that Obamacare was a law. They thought it was not a law. So
well,
there's at least 40% of a – when you do a polling sample, it's very – it can be very selective, and you can skew those numbers. I'm trained as an analyst, so I understand how polling works. You can select your sample to get the result that you want. But if you've got 40% in general of people who do not know that it is a law, it's going to be very hard to convince those people they have to comply.
Right, absolutely. Well, let's go with this. And I talked it over with an investigative reporter. We were talking about the news media in the first half of this program. And, you know, it's hard with the left news media the way that it is. We're fighting some incredible odds to get the information out there. Doesn't all this go on the back of the news media, so to speak?
Well, see, here's where the circumventing the law part comes in, which is very significant, is that another group of people believe that this is the law of the land because the Supreme Court says it is. Well, what the Supreme Court said is that Obamacare is a tax. When it was sold by Congress and by the president, that it was not a tax. It is a tax. Who is going to enforce Obamacare? IRS. And what IRS did, as soon as this became a tax and it belongs to the IRS to enforce it, the IRS, in at least three different instances, has rewritten the law.
Really? Well, that's everybody should be scared to death with the current IRS, the way that it is right now, to be in charge of all that medical information and all those things when they're doing what they're doing and they haven't even turned away from what they've been caught with. That's awful spooky.
Well, it's very scary. You know, in the IRS, they're the ones that were involved in investigating or holding, actually, for the 2012 election, holding back organizations that were looking for tax status, Tea Party organizations, other conservative organizations. Some of their paperwork held up now for more than 3 years without approval. That definitely had an impact on the election because without that IRS approval, they couldn't operate. And some of those people, some of those groups still have not been approved, and here we are going to another election with them being held back. And then we find out the IRS has selectively dug into conservative donors' records and has done intimidation. I mean, you talk about stormtroopers showing up on your door. The IRS is fully armed.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They're fully armed. So if you don't pay your taxes and you don't file correctly, is the IRS going to show up with a SWAT team at your front door?
Wow.
You see, this has become totally bizarre.
Well, it is totally bizarre. And the problem is, you know, I believe that there's more conservatives in America than there are liberals. I believe that, I believe statistics bear that out. But the problem is, and I'm going to go back to that, if it wouldn't for people like WorldNet Daily and talk radio like we have, the media is controlled by the left, and they're basically in the bucket for Obama and everything they want to do. So it's really hard to inform the people when the people can't hear it.
I agree with you. But you know what? We keep plugging on.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. We won't give up at all. And so the book's been out since Tuesday. They can get it at WorldNet Daily. Is it for sale anyplace else?
Oh, Amazon, of course. Always at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the online bookstores have it. Barnes & Noble, I think probably, I know that Books A Million Online has it. There's another one that, I can't remember the name of it, that Borders became something else. All of those stores, the main stores should have it. I know that Walmart has it on their website. Sam's Club has it on their website. It's literally everywhere, available everywhere.
Well, absolutely. And, folks, I strongly suggest that you buy a copy, but buy an extra copy and give it to somebody else that you want to educate. Well, Brenda, thanks for being on with me, and maybe we'll talk to you the next time you write another book. You seem to do them a lot.
One a year.
One a year, is that what it is? Well, that sure keeps you busy, and you had a good co-author, Aaron Klein. And is he out there doing interviews, too, or what?
Yes, he is. Yep, he is. He does what we call the big media, you know, Dennis Miller Show and folks like that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you being on here with us, having somebody to talk to, and you're very educational, and I appreciate you. I want you to know that. But anyway, thanks for being on, folks. Go to WorldNet Daily and look it up. It's Impeachable Offenses. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, really? Impeachable Offenses? I haven't read the book yet. They're supposed to send me a media copy. I don't know whether I'll get one or not, but I will say this. I could go through a long, long laundry list of illegal things. And one of this is this war that he's about to do with Syria. Congress is, from the way I look at it and from the way most scholars look at it, he's supposed to have the approval of Congress. He's not Congress, and let alone Congress isn't out of the woods on it. While they're sending messages that Congress needs to approve it, they're still out there on vacation. What happened to the people in this country? These people, when there's a crisis like this, wouldn't you think that, I mean, back in the olden days, you know what I mean, the time of our forefathers, wouldn't they have jumped on their horses and everybody raced to Congress to make a decision about going to war or not? Or these guys are too busy drinking their martinis and doing whatever off on vacation, that war, people's lives, people that we may bomb, may have consequences of even Russia jumping into it in the sense of in the Middle East, supplying more arms. I don't necessarily believe it'll lead to a world war, but it could ignite the whole Middle East. But these guys don't think it's important enough to come back from whatever it is they're doing and demand that Obama do it. I mean, they'd have a lot more clout if they were in Congress and they were saying, hey, come talk to us, come talk to us, instead of doing it on vacation. You know, we pay these guys way too much money anyway. You know what we need to scream for? We need to let them do no more than two terms. Term limits would really cure the problem. You have these people that have been up there all their lives. It's not supposed to be an lifetime institution, you know. And, of course, the forefathers, you know, I don't know. They would be screaming if they could see where we're at now. I think America's stuck in the mud. I don't think America's getting out of it. The only way that it would, if we could get some people to run, that would be impeccable in the sense of not worrying about the next election. Everybody's worried about the next election. So if you're worried about the next election, then how can they ever proceed forward? And you know what? And they keep passing law after law after law. They need to, Somebody put up here on a thing that said they need to repeal one or two. One or two, they need to get rid of a bunch of laws. I was reading the other day about how that most Americans are lawbreakers. Yeah, me and you, all of us are lawbreakers because they have passed so many laws and ordinances, whether it's in your state or whether it's federally, that you break the law every day. You just don't know it. And they have a lot of laws that are on the books that they are just keeping there to use in case they need it or they want to come against you. Really, this is America. And I go back to that. You folks, I love the Christian church. Of course I do. I love everybody that believes in Yeshua. You folks need to tell your pastors and tell your friends at church, you need to make it political. Church has became a non-political institution. Church was always, in America, was the political institution that changed America. Some of the people that are your forefathers were pastors. They held church in the Capitol building. Really. So you need to speak about a church. You need to speak out. That's the biggest thing, like Ben said in the last program. He said, that congressman said, yeah, but he needs support, meaning, yeah, he probably wants some monetary support, but he needs support of the American people speaking out and against it. If you don't speak up, you know, how can you complain? If you don't vote, how can you complain? You're part of the problem. If you don't vote, you're part of the problem. If you don't complain, you're part of the problem. Because it's your country, or it used to be. Is it still your country? Is this what you want to give to your children? Look at the morality. Is this the morality that you want to give to our children? It's not the morality that I want to get. I pray that Yeshua comes within my lifetime. I believe we are in that time at the end. We're going to talk about that in the next program. It'll be on an hour, which is Prophecy Hour. And we're going to have a really good guest on with us tonight, Carl Gallups, and we're going to be talking about Syria, the Middle East, according to Bible prophecy. What's going on? Is there anything in Bible prophecy about it? Well, I got to get out of here, get ready for the next program. We must remember there is only one God, and he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth, and only through him, and only through him is the way to the Father. You must remember to love the Lord your God with all your mind, your heart, your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's like praying for Messiah's return. Lord our God, Father, King of the universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and his face shines upon you, and is gracious to you, and gives you peace. Until the next hour, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for the Messiah's Branch.